Yeah, he just disappeared. It was the wildest.
I was like, what in the hell?
Hey, well, welcome to Highly Questionable, where occasionally Izzy Gutierrez vanishes. Who knew? Mike Golic Jr., I think he'll be there the whole time.
A tradition unlike any other.
How significant is Hideki Matsuyama's Masters win?
I mean, I watched the final round of the Masters on CBS, and Jim Nance and Nick Faldo wanted to make sure that we understand that they have, in fact, heard of golf in Japan, have heard of the Masters, and it's a really, really, really big deal. Wright Thompson has a great story on the pressure Hideki Matsuyama over the years has put on himself. He was a low amateur in 2011, and this is something that he wanted to bring back to the crib. But Impact, I don't really have a great answer for what that is actually going to do. It's not like people in Japan don't play golf already. It's not like we haven't had people countries in the Masters before. But credit to him, because he came out here and waxed this field. Even if it came down to just being a one-stroke victory at the end, there really wasn't much suspense to the back nine of the Masters on Sunday as there typically is. It felt a lot more like a coronation. But I do find it interesting that the Masters is the big deal over here, right? The idea that there's that Japan and somebody winning the Masters feels like if that dude Pulisic, the soccer player y'all tell me all about, we don't really care that much about what he does over there in the Champions League or whatever. I mean, some of y'all care about that, but overall, it's not like an American story that we're all going to care about. Let these folks tell it. It's going to be a party in Japan on the basis of this golf win.
Pulisic got a big game against Crystal Palace this morning. Come on, I'm just getting on that train. You can get on board too. It's all good. I was watching these Masters and I was worried. I was like, man, am I going to have to watch? Not have to. Am I going to watch all of this golf, because I do find it entertaining, all of this golf over 4 days, and we're not going to say a word about it because Hideki Matsuyama just ran away with it? And then, as you said, Bo, they start telling the story, find out, oh, wow, this is not just a little deal. This is a huge deal for him, for his family, for his country, for his peers to understand exactly what he's going through, what he's gone through, and what he has accomplished. And my goodness, like, yes, his performance was great, but Wright Thompson, that story, if you haven't read it, like, this is just, it's a game story after a golf tournament that it seemed like years to write. So it's amazing. But when you see the depth at which the sport means a lot to him and his family and his country, you'd really get what this tournament meant to him. And I was watching the whole time and thinking, who winning would be a bigger deal to us in the States? Obviously, with Tiger out, would Dustin Johnson repeating be a bigger deal? Not really, right? Anybody winning like their third one, like a Bubba? Not really. So to me, I watched this and I loved this because here was an introvert who was in the spotlight in front of everybody and had a chance to collapse and didn't. And now it seems like his life's meaning is complete, which is crazy to think about. But again, if you're a story you'll read, you'll understand how deep this is. And so to me, it was wildly entertaining and wildly fulfilling to see the ending and him with the green jacket.
I think to Izzy's point of who could have been more impactful, I still go back and look at Bryson DeChambeau potentially being this sort of big oddity, a guy that traditional golf groups maybe aren't necessarily the highest on because he carries himself, the time it takes for him to play. But for this, I think it's twofold. One, we heard Matsuyama himself talking about not really having a Japanese golfer to look up to when he was coming up in that same way. And so now if you take a country who outside of the U.S. has more golf courses in its country than nation on earth, you give that kind of appetite for golf someone from their country to look up to in that way, and who can tell what comes of that, who inspires by that next. But also the financial aspect of this for Matsuyama. We talk about all of the cultural aspects, how important it is to his family, but when hearing people throw around that this could be worth $20 million a year, in that range for him off the green, off the course, in this aspect, and having that, which I'm sure he knew coming from that country that loves golf so much, weighing on him down the stretch. No wonder that dude looked so locked in as he was walking around Amen Corner. I was thinking about that kind of money coming down the stretch. I'd be a little worried about the situation too. So yeah, I think it's impactful for him in a lot of really cool ways that I'm excited about.
Is it a big deal that the LeBron and AD-less Lakers demolished the Nets?
Hey, man, shout out to my employer, because this is not the Lakers-Nets game they thought they were going to get when they decided to make their primetime affair. They got the Lakers without the two people anybody would pay money to see, and they beat the brakes off of the fully loaded Nets in that game. Now, I don't know how big a deal it is, because what they are without LeBron and Anthony Davis doesn't matter. It's like that year that Greg Oden was shooting left-handed free throws. Didn't matter if he shot 70%. In the real game, he's going to shoot right-handed. And in the real game, the Lakers are going to have both of those when it comes to it. So this is cool for them because it shows that they're standing up to something while those two guys are gone. But beyond that, nah, man, this was just a good Saturday night. Not every game has to mean something. Sometimes they can just be enjoyable.
Yeah, we can treat them the way that NBA, which is until they start coming around in the postseason. Yeah, these are just like fun exhibitions. But Bomani's right that the rest of this Lakers roster, and this was always the goal in this interim period, getting enough confidence and experience to be able to slot back in more confidently to their roles when the stars come back. For the Nets on the other side, there's kind of this mounting dread maybe now as we start to look, because we ejected for the after his interaction with Dennis Schroeder in this game. We know the Harden hamstring's been an issue. Kevin Durant now coming back and maybe looking lesser than what we've expected or become accustomed to. Now you all of a sudden get this thing where we're looking back and going, all right, these guys only playing 186 minutes over seven games might be more of an issue. We all just think that this magic wand's going to get waved when we get to the end, and we can bypass all these problems because, oh yeah, when they're healthy, they're going to be great. Can we really count on either of these team stars being healthy in a meaningful way down the stretch? I think that assumption's starting to get more and more tenuous as we go along.
Well, they weren't fully loaded, the Nets. James Harden wasn't there, and obviously Kyrie got ejected, and Kevin Durant doesn't really look like himself. But this game still meant something, and I'll tell you why. Because Andre Drummond just claimed he just won the buyout market. He claimed the best buyout market purchase, and he made LaMarcus Aldridge look like a terrible defender, which, if you sort of scratch your head and think about it, he's been in the Spurs for a few years, he has been a terrible defender on that team. I actually Googled it, and one of the first things that come up was a Spurs story from after they played Joel Embiid and the Sixers that said the Spurs defense, it's possible, has never been this bad. And that is because, largely, LaMarcus Aldridge is in the center. And so when LaMarcus Aldridge is one of the biggest men I have ever interviewed in my life. Andre Drummond backed him down and gave him the too small thing, the disrespectful thing for LaMarcus Aldridge. If you are LaMarcus Aldridge, you have to be so hurt by that. And the game, I've got to go watch film because my defense was so bad. This tells me the Nets have not solved a thing with their interior defense problem. And if Andre Drummond can feast on you offensively, the Nets really have to look inside and say, what are we doing with this front line?
That's because there's a difference between being big man and tall man. LaMarcus Aldridge's last college game was him, Big Baby Davis, big man to him over and over and over again. Hey, fellas, what y'all think about Kyrie not too long after he took some personal days that coincided with his birthday, deciding that he's going to take a personal day again when they go play the Timberwolves? Like, at some point, the rest of these dudes are going to have to get tired of this, right?
Up next on HQ.
If it's a strike, you should not be hitting, like, it should not be hitting you, especially on that elbow, especially after the ump already called the third strike, and to not be able to review it, to call that a judgment call. This is how you get out of the way. Leaning directly over the plate with your elbow pad that's protected is not a judgment call. That's clearly him leaning over the plate because it was a call strike three, and it's the end of the damn game. That's absolutely maddening. Absolutely maddening.
I've never seen this side of you before. Heated.
Highly Questionable is brought to you by USAA Insurance, auto, renters, and home insurance. Do you question who got hosed worse, the Marlins or the Braves?
All right, we're going to start here with Marlins Mets, and I want you to know this call that you are going to see was not one they could review because it was deemed a judgment call, kind of like balls and strikes would be. Let's get a look at this. All right, hit by the pitch. That may seem like a surprise to you because the pitch looked like a strike. That ends the game. It is a strike. My man looked like he put a little of the chicken wing in there in order to get that. That's how the game ended. Izzy's head's about to explode, but don't let it happen just yet. We got another one. Braves and the Phillies. Let's get a look at this. Here we go. They did replay this, and it was upheld. The dude never touched the plate. You know, back in the day, you wouldn't even have that come down to be a call because, you know, before we knew anything about concussions, that would just be woo-woo coming.
The second one, Bo. Man, I haven't been in a club in a while, but that's the closest I've been to it. Woo-woo. The second one gets me mad at replay because that's the type of call where, you know, a few years ago, 10, 20 years ago, you'd be like, Yeah, they probably got that one wrong, but what are they going to do, right? Play shows you that it was wrong, and you can get mad, whatever, whatever. The first one, because it was not reviewable, makes it maddening, right? But the idea that you can be hit by a called strike seems unfair. Like, and then that be a judgment call, right? Like, if it's a strike, you should not be, not be hitting you, especially on that elbow pad, especially after the ump already called the third strike, and to not be able to review it, to call that a judgment call. This is how you get out of the way. Leaning directly over the plate with your elbow pad that's protected is not a judgment call. That's clearly him leaning over the plate because it was a call strike three, and it's the end of the damn game. That's absolutely maddening. Absolutely maddening.
I've never seen this side of you before. The passion, you are heated.
Baseball.
It is amazing, too. I mean, I looked at this and said, don't we always laud these guys that are good at getting hit with baseball and getting on base? Like, I just figured this is one of those things that's the cost of doing business with the spot. And it's my understanding, this isn't something that'll get overturned all that often. The maddening thing to me would be for the Braves on the other side of this, exactly because of what you mentioned, Izzy. This is a reviewable case. And this is the most maddening thing in all of sports, where we're all sitting at home in front of usually 50 plus inches of screen that we can watch every angle in the world on and louder. And that's where all of these leagues, we've talked about it with the NFL, we've talked about it now in Major League Baseball. That's what you're fighting against here, a fan base and a consumer base that's got better looks at this than apparently everyone in the stadium in that spot. And now you get this that we can all look at many times and see is wrong, and you still say is right.
What I'm fighting against, Gojo, is not replay. Like, I get what I'm fighting against is a ridiculous rule that you can be hit by a pitch on a called strike. That's like saying, like, you can just go through the net on goaltending. Like, that's absolutely insane.
Do you question if Miles Bridges had the dunk of the year?
So, for the it's only 2 points crowd, I wish my old buddy Gonzalo was still here so he could give you 2 points. You know what I'm saying? Because here we go. Miles Bridges and Clint Capela. And you know, Clint Capella's a real shot blocker. Wait, oh my God.
You have to back in there.
Yo, back one more time, though, because I love that immediately after it happened, Clint Capela knew all I can do is turn around and walk away. That's it. He didn't stay in the moment. Any of that. Just turned this around. Now, this is a contender for the dunk of the year, but I am still going with this one. Anthony. So the first dunk, I think, was actually more impressive as a feat, but that you're not beating that right there.
So I'm with you, Bo. I like that dunk better, right? It just visually, he lands on top of the defender. Fantastic. The thing I love about the Miles dunk, though, is that he just went through Capela. It was absolutely just a train running through you, and then you saw Capela just get thrown back. And can we talk about Clint Capela for a second here? Because this is not just some guy, okay? He's leading the league in rebounding, and I know people don't care, but he's leading the league in rebounding with 14. He's giving you 15 points. He's giving you 2.2 blocks. Those numbers are insane. I started thinking of Dennis Rodman, right? When you start thinking of rebounders. Dennis Rodman, 1 year, his first All-Star game, he averaged 9-point-something rebounds and 8-point-something points. Was an All-Star. Clint Capela is giving you numbers. And Bridges just dunked on him nasty. In terms of a full accomplishment, the bigger picture, I got to go with Miles Bridges there, because that was just, whew.
Yeah, the Miles Bridges thing to me that stuck out reminded me, like, the factors that go into a dunk that really gets me out of the chair are basically threefold. One is height off the ground, which Anthony Edwards, that might be where he has him beat on that one. The second one is the angle of the cockback. How close are you getting to that full flat 180 on that thing? And Miles Bridges had that thing all the way back here. But the last one is the one you mentioned, Izzy. It is distance from chest to chest, because that is me snatching the soul directly from your body in that spot. But a big shout out in all of this to the For That Hornets game for giving this the appropriate level of fan-like response in this. We talked about what Bomani said, it's just 2 points crowd. No, these announcers, this was the Super Bowl. This was the game-winning shot at the buzzer. They did this justice in a way that I want to appreciate.
Who knew that Mike Golic Jr. had a dunk evaluation form? That he's got these three criteria. Right. Like, who knew that you'd be a whole life to be chosen to sit next to Dr. J and everybody asked, how the hell did he wind up judging the dunk contest?
I know what I can't do. I know what things that are furthest away from my skill set. And so I just say, what would I most like to see for myself one day? When people give me all those wishes about what athlete you would be, I say, give one that can do that for a day. When they're asking me to choose between Tom Brady and LeBron James, there's no choice. There's no contest there. I want to be the guy that can roll up to any park in America and do the thing that's going to elicit that response.
That's exactly why the Clint Capela one is just so impressive. You talk about snatching so. Look what Clint just did to Zion. I mean, he just went up, and you talk about Zion. It's Zion Williamson. Talk about somebody who can dunk through you. He went up and snatched it from him with two hands. Two hands. That's why he was feeling himself when he went up there to try to block Miles Bridges.
Do you question Gardner Minshew's thirst trap game?
I just want to throw it out here that this dude gets a whole lot of attention while actually being good at football. We normally don't let quarterbacks get away with this. This is the rare time we just let a quarterback be the guy who does this.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
him right there. And that is a country music album cover from the mid-1990s. Am I not mistaken here? And that haircut.
Maybe it could be the country app from like current time. So it could be new. Like, listen, the thing as somebody who has taken a photo or two, you just got to lean into it, man. And like Gardner is doing that to a T, like absolutely perfect. Not just the cut and the do, like the full hairy chest exposed, like full denim. Like this is an ad. Like this is probably in a magazine somewhere, you know, if magazines still existed.
If the guys from Florida Georgia Line did the fusion dance, this is what would come out the other side of all of it. But I will say this is a testament to the fact that no matter what haircut you have, money helps.
I, by the way, personally would be ashamed if I was familiar with Florida Georgia Line to be able to tell you what a combination of those two people were. But Mike Golick is willing to put himself out here just to try to make our television show better. Because when I hear Florida Georgia Line, all I want to do is get down to the speed limit and buckle up.
Tonight at 7:20 p.m. Eastern, Marlins and Braves.
I just want to say right now that 24 years game in the history of games was a Marlins-Braves game where Leon Hernandez got a call strike on his 15th strikeout and the ball was halfway down the opposite batter's box. See what the hell happened the other day with Ronald Acuña. I'm still mad just thinking about this. All right, so here's Acuña. Didi Gregorius, like, he plays this. That's a hot – he got – how in the world is he safe? Like, he smoked that to short. And he's not even left-handed.
He put his head down.
I tell you this. This one right here, to me, you never again get to talk about him not playing hard. Like, I feel like from here on out, he doesn't even actually have to play hard because he can do that. Izzy, are you intrigued?
If he can do that, then he has to play hard all the time. Is this like the next evolution of the game? If you can't get a guy out on a routine ball to shortstop, like, wow, are you going to have to bring all the infielders in? Is that how we're going to get more people on base because people keep hitting these home run angles? Like, this is absolutely incredible. When I saw it, my jaw dropped, and I watched it again to see how hard he was hustling out of the box. It wasn't even that hard. Like, if you were to put your head down and just go, but he's looking at the ball. He's looking at the ball, figuring things out, and then turning on the speed, and somehow, wow. It's just, the guy's incredible. But yes, I'm intrigued.
And hit the brakes by the time he got to the ump. Go, look, are you
intrigued? I look at this one, I can't believe that anyone would have the audacity to look at Didi Gregorius and say anything, but man, listen, some people's better is just better in that spot. Like, when you play against a dude like that and you watch that back later on, you click right past it and go, listen, there is nothing that me or you or anyone but God is going to do about that situation.
Streaming online, the PBA.
Now you're wondering why we're talking about this, that PBA is bowling, and who do you think you are? I am. He don't even bowl no more, apparently. Why are we showing you this? Check out Anthony Neier right here.
Processes right after
you, you may be able to relate to this part, the 7-10 split.
7-10, come on, man.
What country do you think this guy's from?
I mean, I can narrow it down to about 12 states, too.
In the history of professional bowling.
So there we are. 7-10 split.
Come on, kid, do it.
First time since 1991 somebody pulled this off in this competition. I know what that guy's favorite golfer is, too. I don't even have to say his name and you know who I'm talking about.
7-10. You bet, kid. You bet.
7-10.
Give me some oxygen and water, the spare of the game. Brought to you by Guaranteed Rate. If you believe it, you can do it. Guaranteed Rate. Believe.
He needs oxygen and water.
I believe your assassin can drop the 7-10. Oh, man.
Ginger assassin.
I just want to send a shout out to whoever at Fox came up with the spare of the game. Like, that's the kind of thing that gets you promoted in the sales department. Izzy, you intrigued?
I very much am intrigued. Was he playing a guy named Butt Turf? I think he was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, look at his opponent's
right
name.
After this shot.
Butt Turf.
Butt Turf.
Wow. Wow.
Think about how good you got to be to overcome that being the thing on the screen next to you, that you've got to be a large American flag wearing ginger with a mullet for us to override that.
Guys, it should be noted, the Janine.
They sell those shirts to people who are 18? Like, I thought you had to age into this whole phase. How did he get there already? All right, that is our show. Izzy Gutierrez, where are you sitting right now? Because I know we can't afford to get you an actual Masters background. Mike Golic Jr., check him out, Janae and Golic, 4-7 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Izzy on golf course, hoping not to get caught.